I understand the, you know, where people are coming from.
Yeah, I see.
Well, I just thanked Chuck up there in the hall, he gave me over, I'm being down here.
And I have them both last week.
This is, the meeting of the, Health Education Social Services Committee, it's April 29th, I have a quorum present, Vice Chair Cato and Representative Byrne and myself. I am distributing our files on the student loan bills. You'll recall, we had, of course, we spent a considerable amount of time on these earlier in the session, and then we had a session, was that last week?
Mm-hmm.
It's all getting blurry for me, last week on the comparisons between the Senate bill, the Senate version, the House Finance version, and the House Hess version. You have before you, I think, copies of those three bills. We had some questions about the differences between the bills. Senator Sturgalewski is here, who, will hear from first, and, why don't you just take a seat at the table? And for the record, I'm distributing analysis by Senator Sturgalewski.
Mr. Chairman, I'm, Senator Sturgalewski, and just here to make some very brief comments on, Senate Bill 120. I was the, original, or am the sponsor of the bill. When I introduced it, it was basically, in, just spoke to the area of an increase of the, $3,000 to $5,000 for, undergraduate and $5,000 to $7,000 for the graduate loans. Senator Hess did some fairly substantial work on the bill, had a number of hearings, and made some changes in the payback provision. And I have handed out some information that had been looked at by Senate Hess. It's dated April 21. At that time, gives a comparison to House Bill 32, and I have no idea whether that information is current at this time or not. But basically, the bill was brought forward simply because of a tremendous number of requests from my area. The area that I do represent, not only my particular district, but throughout the Anchorage area, of course, has a good number of students who not only go to the University of Alaska, but certainly a number of them outside into Fairbanks. And just a whole lot of people were having problems in the processing of loans, and I think that Dr. Romsberg has done an excellent job in addressing many of those problems. Two, in the area of how we fund it. In other words, the question of forward funding, which has already been addressed by the legislature this session, and three, in just simply in the amount of loans not being adequate to meet the inflation. So with that information, of course, I did submit the bill. I think that the work done by the Senate Hess in amending the loan conditions to go from 6 years to 8 years, the number of years over which loans can be paid, the increases in the forgiveness from 40% to 50%, the decreasing of the residency requirement from 3 to 2 years, all are positive things. And with just that, I would commend the bill to you, would respond to any particular questions that you have on it. It was, incidentally, passed unanimously by the Senate. One thing that has been raised over the years is it appropriate, really, that we are paying and many students go outside? And I think that, in my short tenure in the legislature, has been something that has been valued very highly, and that's the student choice, that a student can go where they want to take advantage of the educational program that they think is appropriate for their needs. And yet I think there's a very strong encouragement to bring the young people back to Alaska once they, you know, if they don't take advantage of the schooling within the state. Fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions? Representative Byrne.
Might ask Senator one right here. How is your feeling again on the use of all these monies outside the state?
Well, I say that that's been one of the things that's been, I've heard a lot of debate on as to whether we should be making loans available when students may find it for one reason or another necessary to go outside. And I think there's been just a very strong feeling, at least in the discussions that I've had, that there should be freedom of choice to pursue an academic career. But I think we're seeing more and more of our young people are, in fact, as we've increased our opportunities here, availing themselves of in-state educational opportunities.
You think the percentage of students staying here after high school is actually greater?
Mr. Chairman, I would have to defer to Dr. Romsberg. It's my understanding, but I can't give you percentages that in fact is the case.
I wasn't impressed that there was a high percentage. That maybe we can ask him later on about that too. You think that the students going outside harms the Alaskan universities, inhibits them from developing, just through the volume of students that they
Mr.
have.
Mr. Chairman, otherwise? Just the growth that we've seen and the demand for new programs and so on, I think we would really throw a burden of growth perhaps if we just have the students going to our school. I think the more important thing is that we want our young people, our talent, to be well educated and going to the places. I think there ought to be a competitive factor. We shouldn't make a closed shop in a sense for our institutions here. I think in quality of education, they've got to be able to compete, and I think that's a good factor to make them improve and keep their academic standards improving.
And then, I don't know of any other state that has a scholarship program of this type that's so generous to the students that permits them to go outside of their state boundaries using state money. Do you know of any?
Mr. Chairman, I think that without question, no one can deny, even with the present program, that it is, if you want to use the word, more generous than other states. I think with the amount of resources that we have, that one of the finest things we can spend it on is the quality of our population in terms of education. And I think that commitment is equally as important as the literally hundreds of millions of dollars we make in capital improvements and so on. And so it becomes a judgment value as to whether what kind of programs we put the availability of our resources in. And I certainly think that I would well argue for those that develop our human resources, giving people the education they need to fit into the job market that we create in a whole lot of other ways. So it becomes a debatable thing. Where do we put our bucks? I would think a program like this is a darn good one.
Well, a lot of people agree that. And I have one last question, which perhaps we'll not choose to answer, but someone has advanced, you know, the theory of the proposition that we could well close down, you know, for the expense involved, we could well afford to close down our universities up here and send all of our students outside for education and give them the money as a grant instead of a loan and buy them a car and pay all the transportation and expense money besides for less than it costs us to send them, to keep them here in Alaska and go to school.
Mr. Chairman, you know, that's a neat idea. I suppose if you do cost effectiveness, we could stamp people out with a cookie cutter. But when I look at the age of people going to in the area that I'm most familiar with, Anchorage Community College and University of Alaska Anchorage, it's not all the downy-eyed young college students. We have grandmothers and grandfathers and middle-aged people like myself going back, and they're not people that can jump on a jet plane and go out and get their new car. In other words, education needs to be where people are in many cases, and many of the technical programs and so on that we offer need to be where people are. But I do agree there are some tremendous costs. This state has made a tremendous commitment to education, all the way from the secondary, post-secondary, technical schools, and we'll see increasing demands for that. We have, for instance, a tremendous new program to create what I consider a very multifaceted, unique fisheries program. But great, we're also spending billions of dollars in bottom fishing and fishery-related things. How good if we could get the kind of management we need and so on trained in our schools to participate in that industry.
Yeah. Would you favor loans to part-time students? That was one of our questions we had here.
My understanding is a 12? I really would defer that question to those more knowledgeable on it. I haven't participated in discussions on who would qualify.
Well, my only disagreement, Mr. Chairman, with the witness here is that when she said she was late middle age or something like that, I still think she's a young woman.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, just one final note. I have a son who does not participate in this program. He's going for a 5-year master's program that seems to be taking him a long time. And he has been fortunate enough to be able to get out in the market and for some other reasons to earn his own way. And I haven't had to kick in either. But I can still argue for a whole lot of kids where it's just simply either a program like this that keeps up with the reality of the time or it's, it's just not going to be possible. So thank you very much for the courtesy.
Thank you very much. Carrie, you want to come up with this one?
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Huh? You're going to take care of us tonight.
Okay, I passed out a sheet, and I think you already have one that shows the three versions and some penciled over and some changes there. Just some principal changes. On the left-hand column, it says committee substitute for sponsor, substitute for House Bill 32, finance, and the other is HESS, and then the Senate bill on the right-hand side, and just show some of the differences, and I'll just go through them very quickly. I think you have some questions you may want to ask about them. The loan maximums are different, as you can see. The Finance Committee in the House, and I believe this went to the floor of the House and then was pulled back, and I guess it's sitting in rules now. I don't know the status of it. The
reason for that, Dr. Romsberg, is that the custom and etiquette of this body is that if a bill has come over from the other body on the same subject, normally whatever action we wish to take is normally placed on that bill from the other body to speed up the business of the legislature. So when the Senate bill came over, that wasn't picked up by the Rules Committee. They kept the House bill on the calendar when the Senate bill was referred to this committee. So, all right, good. Senate Bill 120 is the vehicle for whatever we're going to do on tonight.
All right. Then going across, you can see the differences. Undergraduate is 6,000 in both versions of the House bills, 5,000 maximum in the Senate bill. Graduate loan, the maximum is 7,000 in the Finance Committee's version, 8,500 in the HESS version, and 7,000 in the Senate version. So no two of the three agree completely, but there's overlapping in every case. The Finance Committee decided that we should define what good standing means because of some of the problems that have occurred in good standing, and some of which that, in fact, you heard about when you had your teleconference. Good standing is defined in a number of different ways, and the Finance Committee of the House felt that we should define good standing and put some language in their copy of the bill that we should do that.
Let me ask as we go on that. That solution wasn't proposed to the HESS Committee. So you're feeling that without the finance language, you have no authority to define good standing?
We have an advisory committee from the made up of campus representatives on loans, and they have strongly urged in the past or strongly endorsed that they be allowed to define good standing within their own institution, within their own academic community. The finance committee felt that for purposes of this loan only, we should define what good standing is so there would be continuity within the state, at least within our state, and then impose it on institutions outside. And good standing, what we're talking about, is a grade point average. And it varies in this state from one campus within the university system saying that you have to have a 2.0 for the year to another campus within the university saying you have to have a 2.0 by semester. That makes a big difference to a student. It may be suddenly disallowed getting a loan the second semester and so on. And but right now our regulations state that we would allow the institution to define it. So we could change our regulations without changing the law, yes.
Do you support the finance provision?
We haven't taken a stand on that finance position, position as far as the commission goes. I support it personally. I don't think there's any problem with it because the definition we would use is the one that's currently being used by the federal loan program. And it gives a sliding scale. It's a more liberal stand than the Fairbanks campus, but less so than some of the others. Fairbanks, by the way, has the most stringent requirement for good standing, and that was the complaint you heard during the teleconference.
Okay, let's go ahead.
The third thing is one that there's a lot of continuity on in terms of increasing the current years a person may borrow from 6 upward to 8. All three bills agree on that. The House set limits saying you can't have more than 5 years as an undergraduate or else 5 as a graduate, and the Senate was moot on that. It just didn't say anything about limits. The fourth one says corrects repayment language. And this is something that did that CGL, by the way, that's on there, is another one of the nice typing problems we had with this. But we found when we were going through the bill that there is some funny language that crept in a couple years ago in section G of the bill. And what it says is that a person has 10 years to repay. And currently what it says is you have 10 years to repay or a maximum of 15 years from the date the note becomes effective, and that is completely opposite of, or at least in conflict with another part of the of our loan law that says that you can negotiate repayment under hardship for up to 15 years of repayment. The note becomes effective when the student signs it. So this would correct it and say you have 15 years to repay after you get out of school, not 15 years from when you get the loan. There's just a problem in the law, and that cleans it up. The other two bills don't address that because we didn't identify it until we were happened to be going through the language and someone brought that question to our attention. The fifth one, requiring notice to defaulters of accelerated repayment, is in both of the House versions, is not in the Senate. It's something we do anyway. We have no problem with that. That's, if you want to put it in the law, there's no trouble with that. And we discussed that one, I think, before. Another one that was changed, and this is a difference, and a pretty substantial difference. The Finance Committee changed the years of employment to, say, reside. In other words, right now, it says if you complete your degree, you have to be employed in Alaska for X number of years to get your 10% cancellations, your forgiveness. They changed that to reside in Alaska. And the reason they did largely came about because of, for instance, homemakers, male or female. A homemaker may be in the state and they are not employed by definition, and they don't get their cancellation, and we turn them down right now.
You require then some evidence of employment.
Oh yes, we have a form that has to be filled out that documents that indeed they are employed and they have been employed for a various number of years, and homemaker is not an employment category, and they do not get their cancellation benefit. And the House Finance Committee felt that they should indeed be entitled if that's what they're going to do. So they changed it to reside in Alaska. They also felt a person shouldn't be penalized if they simply couldn't get a job at all. And right now, if you can't get a job at all, we have an unemployed category, but if it goes for very long, they don't get the cancellation. So they did change that, and neither bill addresses that other than the finance version. The grant provision, which is the 10% per year, was changed downward, or I should say, remains the same under the finance. It stays at 40%. That's a downward change from what the HES committee suggested at 50% and what the Senate committee suggests at 50%. So the Senate says they want to grant up to half of it in terms of a grant, and the House finance changed that to remain at 40% as it currently is. Another change that's a very small one that finance made is a change in the current law. Right now, if a person is in repayment and has trouble making payments, they can get into a hardship status that we talked about before, where we can extend their payments out for 15 years instead of only 10 years. Right now, we have to do it in increments of 6 months at a time, and they felt that 12 months was more reasonable. I sure like 12 more because it's a lot less work for us. And so they did make that change. The other thing that we endorsed, the commission asked for and endorses very strongly, is the ninth thing here, where you lose your grant provisions if we have to take them all the way to court. The Senate simply didn't address that issue, and it is not in their version, but it's in both versions of the House bills. The retroactive nature is not addressed in any way in the Finance or Hess versions of the bill, but it is in the Senate. The Senate says the provisions are applicable retroactively, which means that if you do change it to a 50% cancelable, that people that have had loans in the past are eligible for another 10%. If indeed they're already at their 40%, they can get an additional 10%. We talked about making that feature retroactive when the bill was here, but the way it came out didn't do that. There's another change, number 11, a redefinition of residency. And this is a pretty subtle redefinition that the Senate has done. And the reason it came about was, currently a person can come into the state, and this, and now remember, this is a very, very isolated case, but it can happen. A person can come into our state, live here in the summer, and say, I am declaring myself to be a resident of the state of Alaska. Go outside, go to a private institution. And I say private because then you don't pay non-resident fees at a private institution. Go to a private institution, come back the next year, work in the summer, go to a private institution again, and they are a legal Alaskan resident for 2 years, and they can get loan money from us. The Senate said that's an abuse because they're really not a resident. They're just coming up here to work in the summer because they can make more money here than they can down south. They have no intention of living here, and they'd like to stop that. So they said a person has to be physically present in the state for 2 years before they apply.
Where is that in the Senate bill?
Okay, the Senate portion, it's on page 2.
Present in
line
the state.
22. B, it says, in addition to the requirements of A, to obtain a scholarship loan, a person must have been a resident for the state for 2 years.
Well, up to line 27.
Down to 27, yes. He has been present, unless it's for military service. And then the other provision is up on the next page. If the person is a minor or a dependent, then the parents have to be here. But what it does stop is that person coming up, working in the summer, and going down. There aren't many people that do that. That's a, I suppose some do, but it's a very small number. There may be more in the future, the way things are going with the loan programs nationally. So they do change that. The 12th item here says when the person first becomes eligible to get their forgiveness benefit or the cancellation benefit. You have to be here 3 years under the House versions. The Senate made it 2 years. It used to be 2 years until 1979-80 when the legislature made it three. And what that really means, what that really means is you are eligible for a 10% cancellation after your second year, but you can't get it unless you're here 3 years. So after 3 years, you really get 20%. That's the way it currently works. First year is a grace year. Second year, you're eligible for 10%, but you can't get it. Third year, you're eligible for a second 10%, and now you can get it, so you get 20%. The Senate said, that's a mess. Let's make it 2 years, because you're eligible for it. We'll give it to you after the second year. Third year, you get another 10%, and so on.
Is this what's referred to as the forward funding?
No, no.
I don't understand.
It has nothing to do with that at all. The reason it got in there in the first place, Representative Foxon, is 2 years ago, there was a provision added to the loan bill that said if you attend an in-state institution, those years of attendance count toward what we call employment. So if you go in-state and then stay here after you complete your degree, you can get your cancellation benefits earlier. But they said, all right, if we make it 2 years, a person can go to school in state, have a grace year, work your year, get 40% of the loan written off, and take off. So they didn't want that, so they made it 3 years. And that was done in free conference, and nobody asked anybody. They just stuck in 3 years there. So it's a little awkward thing that's in there. The Senate changed it and took it out. The House is leaving it the way it currently reads. So it's 3 years, 3 years, and 2 years. The House Finance Committee changed it to say instead of 10 years or 10% for that second year, they just changed it and made it 20% after 3 years to make it, I guess, a little cleaner in their version. And that's on, if you refer to that bill, that's on page 2, line 25. You'll see now that says 3 years of residency, you get 20%. And that's, they're trying to clean it and make it read a little better, I think.
Which version do you prefer?
we can go with any of them. The one I think is the easiest to understand and the best for the student is the 2 year, because they are eligible for 10%. Give it to them instead of making them stay another year. I think that makes sense, and especially if we go with what's being talked about in terms of rebates, and that's what we're getting to next.
Okay.
The 13th item is an intent statement that has been added with the Senate bill. It was to be added with the finance bill, and I'm just giving you this. They asked me to get it to them, and we got them one letter, and they had some problems with it, so they said, well, we'll add it over the weekend, and never got added, and it went to the floor without any intent statement. But they liked the idea of giving this money back to a student as they earn it. And let me explain how that works. Person goes to school, they have a grace year, then they pay for a year. At the end of paying for 1 year, they're eligible for 10% canceled. Right now, we take and lop it off the end. And the students, as they told you, say, that's no incentive for me to come back to the state telling me I'm going to get a benefit 5-6 years from now. We'd like it up front somehow. So the Senate said, they paid for a year, they're eligible for 10%, refund it back. Cash payment back to them, a rebate. The next year they pay again, refund it back, 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 pay again, and we keep it after they hit their 40% or 50%. Then we start keeping their money. The reason they liked it, the reason the students liked it, is because they're getting money back, they're getting a reward up front for being in Alaska. The reason we liked it as opposed to just writing things off is we have contact with them and we can find them if they quit paying, because we have monthly contact with them. And it's an idea that we've never tried it. House Finance liked it, and the Senate likes it. If we're going to do that, then it makes sense to go with the 2 year instead of 3 years, because then instead of having, then they'd have to pay 1 year, they get their money back. If we go with the 3 year, they have to pay for 2 years, and then get 20% back.
Don't you encourage the student not to stay the entire time by doing that?
If they would have to stay, that was discussed in the Senate, they would have to stay in the state with the Senate version of 50%. They'd have to be here 6 years to get their entire 50% written off, the grace year in 5 years. And they felt after they put 6 years in, they're pretty much committed to the state. I don't know, that's debatable.
So a student who stays for the second year can get the cash payment from there. Finally, can possibly will say, well, I got what I want, I'm going to leave now. But if they're paying at the end of the second year and they think, well, I got to stay here 6 years in order to get any benefit out of this loan, payback or cancellation out of the loan, aren't they going to be more likely to stay?
No, as a matter of fact, they're going to get the same benefit in any case, because if they stay 6 years under this plan, they'll get the full benefit. They stay 6 years under our present plan, they get the full benefit, because then they don't have to pay anymore.
They don't get anything under the existing system. They don't get anything until they're here 6 years.
Yes, yeah, they do. They, after they're here 1 year, they get 1 year of grace. After they're in repayment 1 year, they get 10%. We knock off their 10th year. If they leave the state right now, after that, then they're going to only pay on 9 years. They won't have to pay the 10th. They're going to get their 10% if they earn it. They're just not going to get it back in cash. So it works the same way. The break-even point is still 6 years for the people. The difference is the student receives the benefit after the first year instead of 6 years from now.
Okay?
And we can do that. It'll cost, which you see on the next line. Fiscal impact shows what costs of each of these and what it costs to raise the limit and what it costs for rebates. Because when we rebate it back, you see, we are dealing with a revolving fund. if we take $650,000 out of the revolving fund and give it back in rebates or refunds, that's money that we cannot use for other loans, and the general fund has to pick it up if we're going to continue the same volume of loans. So that's a, there's a cost attached to that. So you can see the cost of each of the different approaches on the bottom.
That's, what's the $650,000?
That's the rebate. If we give the money back at the end of the year, right now what we're saying is next year we're going to have about $650,000 worth of cancellation benefits, the forgiveness. If we give it back to them, that's money that we're going to collect that we normally would have used for loans the next year. We won't have it anymore. We'll have to give it back to them.
Back in cash?
Check right back to them. Well, that's the intent of this rebate plan, if it goes through.
Well, I guess you give a credit on their account.
That's, in effect, what happens now. If I can restate
right.
What Carrie's been trying to say here for 10 minutes that I have having trouble understanding. You owe it for 10 years. Let's say you got a 10-year note. You're here 2 years. Under the existing system, your 10th year is lopped off. If you're here 3 years, your 9th year is lopped off. If you're 4 years, your 8th year is lopped off, and so on. No cash changes hands. You just stop paying on your loan earlier. Okay. Under this proposed system, in your second year, the 10th year isn't lopped off. You just get some cash. You're going to continue to pay the loan for 10 years.
Right.
Right? You just get some cash.
That's exactly right. What happens is, in effect, your first year is lopped off. You paid it out, and you're going to get it back. There, instead of lopping it off the end, you're lopping it off the front. That's really what it does. And this is what the students wanted. They said, if you're going to give us a benefit, give it to us up front. That's really an incentive to come back. Don't tell us to come back, make the same payments as the guy down south makes, and tell me 6 years from now I'm going to get a benefit. If you want me to, you want a real incentive to come back to the state, if you give it to us up front, that's an incentive. That was the pitch the students used. The Senate liked it. Finance liked it.
Okay. Any questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and
Senator Byrne.
Assume that the student had a $3,000 loan in the first year, right? And at the end of the first year, you give them a $300 cash rebate.
They would have paid us $300 plus interest, and we would return the $300 plus interest. That's correct. The second year, they'd pay us the same thing again. Continue in that fashion until 5 years, and we keep it.
They mean that they would have paid you. You loaned them $3,000.
And they
loaned them $3,000.
Right, and they're going to start making payments.
They didn't make any payments.
Well, the first year is a grace year. We're talking first year of repayment, which is really their second year. First year is a grace year. No money changes hands, and they don't get any benefit. Second year, they have to pay it.
You're talking strictly about the repayment after they're through school.
That's right, and then they have a grace year. When they
the
don't
grace year, right, and then the beginning of sixth year,
then
start
they
start repayment.
Then they start making payments.
Right.
Every month.
Yeah.
Okay, if they make payments for 12 months and have remained in Alaska, now we're not talking about anybody else that's not here, remained in Alaska, then they're eligible for 10% of their loan to be canceled. We normally lob it off. Now what we'd do, if this would pass and the intents would go with it, we would say, all right, here's your 10% back.
Yeah.
They paid us, get it back.
You said 300 and then you pay back 300, but you're talking about paying back 10% of what they.
Well, that would be 300.
Of a $3,000.
Of a $3,000. No, his sample. Plus interest.
I thought you were paying 300.
Well, let's assume the average student's going to have borrowed, we'll say, $12,000 at the end of 4 years in college, right?
Yes.
And so,
be $1,200. $1,200. They would pay us $1,200 a year for 10 years, and we'd rebate it back.
You're saying that instead of knocking it off the end out there as a forgiveness, that we take the first year of the repayment, and we give them and we forgive the first year.
After, at the end of the year. See, here was the real proposal. The students wanted us to give them that 10%, just knock it off up front. They said, we would like the benefit early. We'd like it that first year. Cancel our first year. Well, my argument was, we can't cancel it up front because we don't know you're going to be here for 12 months. And you're not eligible until the end of that time. So the Senate said, okay, have them pay. And if they've been here, give it back.
I still don't get that.
Let's assume that the students borrowed $12,000, okay, and then finishes college, and has a grace period. That's 1 year, so that's 5 years. So right. Beginning of 6 year, then he starts paying back.
Right, and they're going to give it, he's going to pay us $1,200 a year for 10 years. And we're exclusive.
How about interest?
Plus interest.
$1,200 plus interest.
Right.
Times 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, under the present policy, we're forgiving that 10th year.
The 10th, the 9th, and so on. Right.
Right.
So they begin paying the same dollar amount. They'd pay us $1,200 the first year under the current plan. And then they'd pay us the same thing the second, and we'd keep it for the first, we keep it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly their 40% thing comes into effect, and they don't have to pay us the last 4 years of their repayment schedule.
Well, when does that 40% start? It's 50% that we're proposing it. Currently it's 40%.
Yes, two bills would have it at 50%.
So the way it works at the present time, then, for that 40% is, we take the 40% off that $12,000?
We take 10% a year as they earn it. They're here 1 year, they're eligible for 10%. And on a 10-year repayment, it works nice. 10% is 1 year. Take off the 10th year. The next, they're here another year, you take off another year, you take off another year, and another year, and then they paid us for 5 years, and we say, you're out of debt. That's the way it works now.
Mm-hmm.
The way the Senate says is, they pay the 1 year, and we give it back. And we keep giving it back, and then they end up paying us the last year. Their argument also is, 5 years from now, they'll be in a better financial situation to repair, to pay their loans, and there are a lot of arguments, persuasive arguments, for doing it the way the Senate is saying. But it's going to cost, because it's money we're taking out right now. It costs you eventually. It costs you the same thing. It costs the state of Alaska the same thing, except right now it costs us 6 years from now, and they're saying it costs us up front.
And I hope that's not too confusing.
I think I understand.
Sure.
Can I
help? No, you know, it's still really confusing, but I think about that. Although I hate to see the money go out, though. That's
I know enough.
Mr. Chairman, Gary, then they would have their forgiveness after the 6 year. Then the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th year, they would owe on their loan.
That's right.
And they would pay the remaining 50% cut over those years.
That's correct.
So I do have it.
And ostensibly, they will have been established. They're making more money then. They can better afford to make their payments.
Married, you got a family, or are you apt to stay in Alaska?
They've been here for 5 or 6 years. They're probably going to stay here, and they have gotten that benefit early, and it's great for the student.
Better than the
citizen. Oh, yes. Yeah. And I should point out, when you talk about a loan, a debt of $12,000 or $20,000 or even $40,000, and that's $4,000 a year, and possibly writing off as much as 50% of it, $20,000 debt. And you're saying to that student, if you come back to Alaska, we're going to write off $20,000 the first 5 years you're here. You're going to get a lot of them coming back and staying here for 5 years. Instead of the last 5 years. It's not as much of an incentive, because right now you say, if you come back 5 years from now, we're going to give you a break. That doesn't mean as much to them. So there's good logic to it. It's kind of cumbersome, but there is some good logic behind it.
Mm-hmm. Might have merit to a separate bill, actually.
Okay, my proposal here. Thank you, Carrie. My proposal here, if at all possible in the time we have, would be to go through each of these, ask for the position of the committee on each of them. I'm going to be so presumptuous as to suggest what my position is on each and ask if there are objections or disagreements with them in an effort to move this along. I do not have a recommendation on number one, the loan maximums. As you see, the amounts in our bill were the highest of the two. What's the pleasure of the committee? I would certainly say either ours or the House Finance version, but it's a pleasure.
Representative Moxon, I would like to see the $6,000 on the undergraduate, and I could live with the $7,000 on the graduate level.
Okay. consider that a motion. Is there any objection to the House Finance numbers, 6,000 and 7,000?
Just a question, Mr. Chairman. That 6,000 represents doubling, doesn't it? 3,000 now, right?
Yes.
And didn't Dr. Oldberg have some questions about that amount, some reservations about their ability to pay it back?
We did. In fact, the commission position was 5,000. It's just a matter of how much the person is going to get into debt, and that was one of the reasons that the Senate also, and your committee, coupled it with a 50% cancellation, and I think those two things really have to work together. If you leave it 40% and with the 6,000, that's pretty stiff, so it depends on what you're going to do when you get down the page.
Keep in mind, there was a study before this committee on the cost of going to school, and the figures we established were somewhat based on that study. Any other questions?
Well, I'd favor the 5 and the 7 any more than I would the 6 or 7. But,
okay, I'll ask for a vote if there's no more discussion. All in favor of Representative Cato's motion to adopt 6,000 and 7,000 as the figures, raise your hand. All opposed. Okay, on the second matter, this committee, you recall, decided not to get involved in defining good standing and to leave that to the individual institutions. My recommendation is to keep the Hess position on that. What's the pleasure of the committee?
I so moved. I think we're opening a can of worms. I would like to reiterate my position on it the first time, is that in as much as there is no standard good standing, quote, throughout the nation, or even throughout sometimes a school within itself, that I don't know how it could really be defined by anyone to be adequate. And so I very definitely oppose trying to put a letter grade or any other thing on a good standing. The university should be able to decide that themselves.
Okay, any objection to using the continuing the Hess position on and not using a good standing definition?
I would expect, Mr. Chairman, to see the Finance Committee substitute with a good standing definition. But I don't object to
that matter
this way.
Be resolved. Hearing no objection, we'll prepare a bill with that in it. Number 3, the House Finance and the House Hess agree. I would propose to use the Hess language. The 8 years of borrowing with limits by whether you're undergraduate or graduate. Any objection to using the existing Hess language? Hearing none, so ordered. Number 4, correcting the repayment language. I agree with the error picked up in the Finance Committee. It would support the House Finance Committee version that corrects that language.
House Finance.
Any objection to that?
No.
So ordered. Requiring notice to defaulters, I would again support the S position, which the House Finance Committee agreed with. Any objection?
No.
Hearing none, so ordered. Number 6, changing employment to reside. I agree with what the Finance Committee did on that. I would support the House Finance version. Any objection to that? Order. Grant provision, I would propose continuing at 50%
forgiveness,
right. Any objection to 50%? Hearing none, so ordered. Changing the hardship increments to 12 months, I agree that the Finances Committee has picked up the problem there, and I support the House Finance version. Objection? Ordered. Loss of the grant for default, again the Hess language. The House Finance language was slightly changed. It does not appear to change the intent of that, and I would propose that we approve conceptually the Hess language for the default, with the the idea that I'd try to reconcile that language, figure out why the finance committee changed it slightly. Any objection to the Hess language for the default? That's where they get it, they lose all their forgiveness if we have to take them to court. Hearing no objection, so ordered. Retroactivity. What's the pleasure of the committee on this? The Senate bill provides that the forgiveness provision is retroactive to 1971. Carrie, one thing I didn't ask you is the fiscal impact of that.
It wouldn't be a substantially large one because not that many people have already got their 40% in terms of money directly out of the budget. It would be an additional 10% for all of those that do qualify, and there would be an impact in future years. Next year, there won't be a large one, but there certainly would be an impact.
Any objection to going retroactively for people presently paying back their loans who would pick up the increased forgiveness under this bill?
Well, I don't know that I object, but it would be nice to know what the impact would be.
Did you come up with a dollar figure for the Senate?
No.
My proposal would be to adopt it, but not move the bill physically out of this committee until we get a fiscal note that incorporates that. Any objection to adopting a Senate position on number 10? Hearing none, so ordered. The redefinition of residency, in my opinion, if I may be allowed to shoot from the legal hip, I think what the Senate's done is clearly unconstitutional, requiring permanent presence in the state for 2 years. The question we talked about in that committee, I think we're just asking for trouble, and I would support encourage the House Hess provision.
What's the present law say? Senate says been present in the state for at least 2 years, unless his absence was.
First language in the. It's the language is the same, except it doesn't state physical presence. It doesn't. That's the big change. It says you have to be present in the state for 2 years. That's all it says.
I think the problem that the Senate language attempts to address is too small to run the additional legal risk that it entails.
Is it due though?
Testimony was there are very few examples where it's a problem.
The only time it would happen, and I'll bet you could count the cases on right now, at least on one hand, the only time it happens, like I said, is if a person comes here and goes to a private school. If you go to a public school and declare yourself a resident of that state, we won't give you a loan. You have to declare yourself a non-resident. So it's really a small number of people that would come back.
Any objection to the Hess position on residency?
I would give you more ammunition if you'd like. It would also affect a person in this state that was here for 30 years and went outside for a year and went to school on their own and didn't borrow money from us. And then the second year decided they needed money. They couldn't get it under that language because they wouldn't be physically in the state 2 years before they applied. So there's some problems with it.
Number 12, when you become eligible, how many years before you become eligible for your first, you say grant, but...
The law says grant.
Is it grant? It's not
with the law.
So.
Yeah.
All right. I'm inclined to go with the Senate language if I understand it. However, and I guess I have to be candid and ask Carrie here, I'm also inclined not to adopt the Senate language on number 13. That's going to put us in an inconsistency?
I don't think so. What you're really doing, if you adopt the Senate language for number 12, you put the program back the way it's been for 8 of the 10 years we've had it. And it was just changed. And it said that 3 years came out of a free conference move for 79-80. And if anything, it just really complicates things.
Okay. I would recommend the Senate position on number 12, which is that we go from 3 years, they have to wait 2 years. Any objection?
No.
Number 13, again, I would not, as I understand it, not support the rebate proposal in the Senate bill apparently was also discussed by the Finance Committee, and I would support the Hess position, which is that we leave the system the way it is, which is you spend 2 years, you lop off the 10th year, you spend 3, you lop off the 9th year, and so on. I see no reason to change that system, and I'm, payment of cash always worries me, the impact on income tax and the rest of it. I just don't think that's a very good idea.
That's what I worry about, too. I'd rather skip that 13.
Meaning not do it.
Yeah.
This would be my position.
Yes, committee.
Not do that and leave it. You disagree. You think, yeah, we ought to do this?
I very definitely like the incentive motive. I think that after 6 years in the state, they're established enough, and I go along with the Senate thinking on that, that they're in a better position to pay that money. And I do know on my own experience, I borrowed money to go to school. I would far rather have had that forgiveness up front than I did in the back. Because up front, I was struggling, had a horrible time eating, and had I had the deal, I could have made it a lot easier, and the actual incentive to stay in the state, as far as I'm concerned, is far more terrific than it would be if it's lopped off the end.
I guess we have a disagreement about which is the better incentive, then. I guess I would argue that the incentive under the existing system is just as much. Any other discussion? All in favor of the Hess version on number 13, which is basically to do nothing to the existing system, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Any other questions or comments? I'll put that while the committee says be prepared.
I disagree on 13.
Well, it may be a great idea if we had time to think it out and work it out on paper. I think it might be a good idea.
My own personal experience, this would have been far better. And I started school at 32.
Right.
Right.
You
must have
just graduated here,
sir.
Day before yesterday.
I'll get your fiscal note on that.
Okay, thank you very much. Any further on student loans?
That was college.
Have a committee report for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
163 has been moved out of the committee is per our normal procedures. So we've had a committee substitute prepared. We have a committee report. There's been some slight changes in the language that Polly would like to explain, which apparently don't change the thrust of the committee's action, but I'll have her explain it.
Okay, the first change is on page 2, line 25. The word by the 31st day, we had said after the 30th day. And thinking about that, it was kind of open-ended. After the 30th day could mean the 100th day. So I just changed that to by the 31st day because the intent was to give 30 complete days.
Any questions on that?
The next change is on page 3, line 21, paragraph D. Instead of using the term item by item in total package, what I thought was easier for people to understand was to explain what those meant. So you say the arbitrator's award may include the entire offer submitted to the arbitrator by the employee bargaining agency, the entire offer submitted to the arbitrator by the school board, or items submitted by each of the parties.
You're in the gads of trouble on that.
Let's pull out
item by item is a very definite part of binding arbitration. And what they're trying to avoid in their bill is they want an item by item settlement. And what we do here is the arbitrator makes a decision on all the items, right?
No, we're saying that the arbitrator may, it's up to the arbitrator to select a method and to advise the parties with which method will be used, but that the method can be either item by item or total package, but instead of using the word item by item, we say entire offer. I mean, instead of using the word total package, we say entire offer. Instead of using the word item by item, we say item submitted by each of the parties.
Let's get the original. I don't know much about that, except that the language is very carefully reviewed on questions of arbitration.
That's the reason I was.
It says item by item. Designates definitely that you couldn't put two items together. Whereas if you say items, you could. See what I mean? Well, you can. You do item by item. Oh, no. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Item by item means you take up one, two, three, four.
Mm-hmm.
The way it, if you say items, you could take up one, two, three, four together. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying,
the arbitrator.
The entire offer would include items 1 through 4.
Yeah,
you're saying
say
in terms of 1 through 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I think the item by item.
This was not a change from the House Bill. It was a change from the Senate
line.
I could be incorrect on that, but.
People were unfamiliar with labor terms, not understanding what they meant. This is an attempt to explain them in English.
Yeah, and that's why the item by item is
labor jargon.
But it's people doing labor jargon that are going to live with this law, right?
This is explaining what that means. Well, I'd be inclined, I'm not sure the signpost much more brought up than we do, but I'd be inclined to go with the present language. Because those are terms of labor art,
mm-hmm.
terms of art for labor. What I would propose is that we not change that language as you're proposing, unless until somebody can explain to us that's involved in the negotiations, that that's okay. Both sides, okay? Any objections to staying with the existing language?
On page 3, line 9, we had the language was 2 working days, and to make it clear, we put 2 days exclusive to Saturdays and absolutely clear as to what working days are.
question?
Okay, page 4, section on strikes. As opposed to having the two sections saying you can have a strike under subsection A and a strike under, not a strike under subsection B, there is a provision here that says the teacher may not engage in a strike, and on page 5, section 5 on page 15 is the exception to the no strike provision.
What's that now? May not engage in a strike.
Okay. Now on page 5, section 5, line 13 is the exception. So if you recall, the school board has the opportunity to opt out within 4 months, October 31st. So it falls in a more clear place where you have the applicability of the act and then the exception to the no strike provision. Policy and applicability of the act where the school board has opt out provision.
Secret ballot provision.
That was me. That's exactly the same as the one.
Which was where? Oh,
as we, right.
That's customary. Mm-hmm. My question was, is that secret ballot, that's so ordinary in these employee bargaining agencies?
Right.
Right.
Well, the section appears to have been completely rewritten. Now, I would not like to see that. I don't even know the impact of it.
It's more clear. This was a working draft. This is the way it's going to work. This is. This was a rough. And this is clearer language.
I'm not even sure I agree with that.
Maybe it's clearer language?
Section 5 or what?
Don't separate a prohibition from an exemption. Legislative drafting, unless you have to. Section 5 has no statutory reference. Code revision, code revisor didn't give it any statutory reference, which means it wouldn't appear in the class of statutes.
How could it not?
Be my. Are there any others?
Yes.
No agreement on that. Hold on.
On page 5, instead of saying 4 months, we said by October 31st, 1981. It's clearer because the effective date is July 1st, 1981.
I'm sorry. Where are we?
Line 5 on page 5.
We adopted 2 months?
No, that was voted down. Proposed amendment. So we're saying October 31st, 1981, given the specific date rather than the 4 months of the effective date of this act. The act is effective July 1st, 1981, 4 months from that time.
Decide on these. I'm a little troubled about people who have signed the committee report not having an opportunity to review them. is potentially a substantial change in the bill, depending on when the bill goes into effect. Of course, that's not resolved yet.
Yes, it is. Because that takes 51%.
The bill we adopt takes effect immediately. Since, Arduino Byrne, since we're working in close cooperation with the Senate on this, and there's apparently some confusion about what's come out, I would propose not to take any action on this and discuss it further with the Senate.
Okay, I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
We're, in Section 5 there, we're making an exception to the no strike provision. But I don't see any exception to the lockout provision. So how about if we just reverse that around and say that the teachers don't sign up, the school can lock them up?
Teachers,
the
school
that has the
good.
That's good.
That's good.
Not a bad concept.
Well, we'll discuss that with our
okay.
I'm unclear.
Well, you can't. Those are substantive changes. They are changes that are necessary in order to complete work on the bill with the Senate. Let's confirm that. I'm uncomfortable with only two members of the committee here adopting substantive changes to something we've already voted out.
That's right. We did vote out two. I think that this bill is. Bill might make it this year or next year. It's been a long time in the making, you know, so you want to be sure if it gets out of here, I guess, too, that it should be a good bill. I appreciate that.
Okay. I think I'm 91 now. Folks, Karen and Jana, have you had a chance to review this proposed committee substitute?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's just pass it out, summarize what it does, and not ask for a vote. We have a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 91. The 11-inch sheet that you have is a proposed new Section 010 to substitute for what you have in the CS. Let's look first at the proposed amendment.
We're really going to still not see
no action. No action. No action. The proposed committee substitute would establish the council in the Department of Public Safety as advocated by the shelter networks and supported by Commissioner Nix, and apparently, I would guess, in opposition to the position of the Department of Social Services. The language of the proposed amendment, as opposed to the committee substitute. If you can look at the 8.5 by 11 sheet, makes it clear that it is placed within the department, but that the council will have responsibility for coordinating a variety of programs that operate out of the Department of Health and Social Services, Department of Public Safety, and Department of Law. I'm not even clear as to the legal effect of that language, but as I indicated at the hearing, I am concerned about the perception of the program should it be placed in either of the two agencies that we've discussed without any sort of indication that it's to act independently.
Without what?
Indication that it's supposed to act independently. I think it's important to put the intent of the legislature that council is to coordinate functions that are in several different agencies or departments.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't clear from the proposed committee substitute that simply placed them in the Department of Public Safety. So the difference between the language you have in the CS and the language you have in the proposed amendment simply is that it's an interdepartmental planning and coordinating agency for all these departments that have programs available.
But they're under the...
They would be under public safety.
Within the Department of Public Safety.
The original governor's bill, you recall, put them in Health and Social Services.
Right.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Jenna?
As long as you're talking about the proposed amendment for ONO, is that what you're talking
yep.
about right there? Do you think it's necessary to add the language and to provide crisis intervention to do the same thing to coordinating and planning for crisis intervention and prevention programs?
At the very end. Just add in those words.
Well, we're missing some words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than after assault, you would add in and to provide crisis intervention and prevention programs.
No, because I think that is included within services. We aren't going to have a motion on this today, so this is quickly typed up and maybe it isn't exact parallel language. The intent is to cover the same people and the same program. The intent of the proposed amendment is not to change that at all. Okay, membership and terms. There have been a couple of changes here. First of all, three persons appointed by the governor from a list provided by the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Two persons appointed by the governor who have been victims of domestic violence or sexual assault. So the council would consist of five. The three agency people who were proposed to be added would be ex officio members. On line 29 of page 1, the proposal was to put the chief prosecutor on here ex officio. I think the proper procedure would be to put the attorney general or his designee, who will probably be the chief prosecutor, but since the prosecutor works with the attorney general, I think that's the proper language. We have Attorney General's opinion that indicates that it is not constitutional to create a council with people appointed from a list. After reviewing that matter, I don't agree with the opinion. I'm prepared to go ahead and say that the three persons are to be appointed from a list. Just want to flag that for you. We may have some problems down the line with that.
Lines
19 through 21.
Well, that whole works.
They think the governor should have total freedom to appoint whoever he wants. I don't think that concern rises to the level of a constitutional requirement.
Well, do you have a copy of that?
Legally, the governor, everyone is appointed by the governor, and the governor can't be forced to appoint
hire anyone. So that if the network were to give the governor a list and say, you must appoint, the governor could refuse to appoint and ask for another job. The governor could keep asking for the list until the governor is satisfied with the appointment. I don't, that's how I see it legally. I don't see it as unconstitutional to ask him to appoint from the list just to be willing to give as many names as necessary so that governor
can
feel comfortable.
He doesn't judge it already.
You just feel comfortable.
That's in the Constitution.
Oh, well. But at any rate, I don't think he's right here. So,
it wouldn't hurt Melanie how they just join the list.
That's right, exactly.
Terms of office is slightly changed. The legal opinion also indicated that it was unconstitutional to appoint someone for a term of office and not authorize the governor to remove that person. So on page 2, line 2, we've added language to indicate that the term of office is at the pleasure of the governor, although the term is 2 years. So we have made that adjustment. I'm trying to flag other changes.
Page 2, line 11, statewide public teleconference.
Right. Require that the council have a statewide hearing on issues of its business. Are there any new powers or duties in it?
No.
Oh, the resource materials.
We don't review.
Let me just flag it because it was my proposal. Page 2, lines 26 through 28, developing resource materials for the education of the public. And my package on no other changes in the powers and duties. Any other changes in the mandatory responsibilities? They are substantial. I don't want, Senator Byrne, I don't want you to misunderstand that there are disputes between the administration and us, and me, about the power of a council. They do not support the idea of granting a council power to receive money and issue grants. In my view, that's the best solution to the problem, though, if we have a disagreement.
We did that with the old last year's commission. That's one of the things we argued about here. But
right.
I'm not quite sure about here, but it is an unusual step, and I wonder, is that constitutional?
Well, that's what the legal opinion was very, very interesting. They gave us the legal opinion that said that councils were unconstitutional. Two reasons they gave is, number one, because members don't serve at the pleasure of the governor, and number two, the governor can't appoint anybody he wants, cannot appoint anybody he wants. So we addressed those two.
I think it's politically,
makes
it bad government, but that's a
policy. Councils do create unusual issues. You are bypassing the executive branch of government, in a sense. So I would think that could raise a constitutional issue. But even if they did that, the only thing that would happen would be that the Department of Public Safety, that would be the department that would request and receive and handle the money then, I would prefer to see the department do it anyhow, as a matter of policy for consistency, but it does give the councils a lot of input, no question about it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other changes here?
Page 4, line 14, section 2. Provide services to persons with arms and
the shelter network has never charged for their services. My hope is they're not required to, similar to what we do with the homemakers.
Eventually, that issue will have to be addressed. I mean, because lots of people are able to afford it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're in a state of mind they're in at the moment. They don't know what to do. They don't know their shelter.
May well be down the line. That's right. Any other
provide crisis intervention prevention program, specifically exclude correctional halfway houses, outpatient mental health programs, drug or alcohol rehabilitation.
Where is this from?
Page 4, lines 19 to 24, so that it would be clear what was meant by crisis intervention and prevention was not to include halfway houses, outpatient mental health programs, drug or alcohol rehabilitation.
Okay.
Sorry.
We have just gone through a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 91 on domestic violence programs.
Are you ready to vote?
Give me just a jiffy, speed reader.
Okay, we're proposing on this sheet, we're proposing a slight change in the first section of the bill. That's on the 11th sheet is my proposal, which is that it still stays in the Department of Public Safety, but indicates that it has coordinating responsibilities with the three departments that are involved.
I have no problem with that, as long as it stays in the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Membership didn't change much. The three persons from nominated by the network and appointed by the governor, two persons who have been victims of domestic violence or sexual assault, the council would be five. The three official members, the Commissioner of Public Safety, Commissioner of Health and Social Services, the Attorney General, would be ex officio. We changed the term of office to say a person not only has a 2-year term, but serves at the pleasure of the governor. The governor's office is indicated. The Department of Law has indicated that. So we've got to do it. On page 2, line 11, we require that the council provide for a statewide public teleconference hearing at least once a year. Page 2, lines 26 through 28. Require the council to develop resource materials for education of the public about domestic violence. Most of the powers and duties and mandatory responsibilities have remained the same. I just had a great person occur. I want to flag to you that those are substantial powers to the council. And we got a little problem with the governor on that, but it's my feeling we should still go ahead and do it.
It's an entirely different type of council than a lot of them do.
Yeah, that's right. Page 4, lines 19 through 24, we've changed the definition of crisis intervention and prevention to exclude. Exclude from this funding correctional halfway houses, outpatient mental health programs, and drug or alcohol rehab programs. Those are separate sources of funding. And the concern is that they're going to drain off money for the next official. Going very quickly, but I can't see any other substantial changes.
Yes, I'm ready to vote.
A little nervous about not having two members here, but what's the pleasure? You ready to vote?
Yes.
Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
You have a quorum.
Does he,
Mike?
Pardon?
He has his faithful quorum.
Yeah, he does, so we should appreciate that.
Do you have a committee report on anyone?
There a motion to adopt proposed committee substitute for House Bill 91. Act relating to domestic violence, sexual assault, and crisis intervention and prevention programs. That changes the title.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Adult crisis intervention.
Why did that get changed? Is that intentional?
challenges too. Is that the idea? What's the question?
The title's been slightly changed. I dropped the word adult before crisis. For House Bill 91-S, including a title amendment, and to report that bill out of committee. Is there any objection to the amendment or to the motion?
Yeah, you know.
Well, that's not an objection.
No,
that's hearing no objection, the motion to adopt CS for House Bill 91 is adopted, and the bill is reported out of committee.
Thank you all very much.
Pardon me? Yeah, I would
which one is it?
Any changes from the time we did this to the time we did this? Oh, yeah, right, we have. Okay, folks, some time ago, and what I'm going to do is not keep this very long here, some time ago, April 8th to be exact, this committee adopted a committee substitute for House Bill 43. That was done, as you may recall, as we've done with many bills here, without the CS in front of us, we adopted amendments. In drafting the CS, we ran into a number of problems. What we have done is to completely redo the committee substitute because of the problems. I would not even propose, well, maybe I can try to summarize them for you. At any rate, there is a new committee substitute that I'm going to ask the committee to act on. And I will try to summarize the changes, and I will not, it's my intention not to use the existing committee report, because I have to apologize to you, we changed ground on this one, because we found some political problems with it, some technical problems with what we already did. So I'm going to distribute a proposed committee substitute, try to summarize for you the major changes, ask you to review it, and take it up.
What am I supposed to do?
Give
that over there to Jerry?
Yeah, when I give you.
East Washington, D.C.
Right.
It'll go in his file.
Okay. Okay, let me see if I can try to remember the changes. Section 1, Section 2, Section 3 are all the same. Section 4, you may recall, do you have this file before you?
I have it out. Do you want it?
Well, I'll try to. If you recall, on the first page of the existing bill, there's the provision that gives grants to the municipalities for administering these programs, and it went into some detail about what they were going to get reimbursed for. It was the proposal to it's much simpler to administer the grant program if you set just a flat rate and say that you're going to get 10% of the amount of money you administer for the daycare assistance program you're going to get for the cost of administering. I've checked with Anchorage, one of the ones that's been most concerned about it. They say that that's acceptable. They just get a flat 10%. It's much easier to calculate.
What do they get though?
Nothing. Specific provisions of law is that the person who administers the grant has to pay all the administrative costs. They're called testimony.
Yeah,
the municipality said that they were spending more money and it's getting more and more complicated to administer.
Yeah.
And it was also discouraging the open, the smaller communities from administering grants in those communities. So that's 27 through 29. Would just be 10%, rather than that complicated formula in the original bill. On lines 22 through 26, the language has been changed because municipalities are not the only ones that administer daycare assistance. Other organizations also administer this assistance. There's no reason not to provide those organizations with a 10% administrative cost too. So that's why the new language there. On page 2, line 1, we set a minimum. If anybody, any community that administers a daycare assistance program is going to get at least $1,000. Because otherwise you get some ridiculously small amounts of money to administer. On page 2, line 6, proposal was to add or seek work. That might even have been, that was in the CES, that you guys all voted.
Yeah, we had that.
Okay, the daycare grant program, it's been through so many phases, I can't remember exactly what you voted on. But most of this is not changed. It's grants for the operation of child care facilities. It is different now than the daycare assistance program. Payments to the parent or guardian in order to pay the amount of the charge. This is a direct grant to the child care facility. This committee has approved the concept of grants, but as you'll see, there have been some changes. I think there are no changes on page 2, are there?
Other than just the name,
the change in the name of the child care grant program. Right. Change the name of the program. Okay, page 3, line 1.
Oh, the only other one
is adjusted and maximum, and then adjusted. Right. We approved $150 a month. Then provided for a geographic adjustment. The way we worded it before, the geographic adjustment with 150 being the smallest grant, and then going up from there. One of the political problems with this bill is it's costing a lot of money. So the proposed change would put 150 as the maximum grant and adjust downwards for geography.
Where does it say maximum? Where does it say that?
Shall not exceed, may not exceed.
Line 25, page 2.
May not exceed 150 per month, yeah. Right. Just on a geographic basis.
So we have to adjust it downwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, downward, that's right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right,
you adjust either up or down?
Page 3, line 1, subsection D. Provides, remember the grants we were talking about for education and training of child care employees or administrators? It's been slightly rewritten, but the same intent. The proposal I have is that apparently after checking with the people that are involved in this program, we approved a fiscal note for training of $50,000. The proposal is $100,000. They think there's enough training to be done that they can spend $100,000 on. The amount does not appear in this bill. It would be I'm not asking for votes today. Let's see. changed F, page 3, starting on line 10, slightly, for the way that you calculate the grant. The grant, the monthly grant, is going to be calculated on how many kids are there, paid on a monthly basis. The way it was worded before, there was some question it might be paid on the number of slots you have, whether or not it's filled with a child. You also recall our discussions about the attendance policy. The committee approved an amendment that said if you're going to get one of these grants, you have to provide the attendance policy for your kids at, was it 20%? The one that the committee approved? 20%. The information we've gotten since then is that 20% is an arbitrary figure. In some communities, you will not need that many. Other communities, you may need more than 20% of the slots provided on the attendance basis. So subsection G there shall be determined under a formula established by the department, which takes into account the demand for attendance-based attendance policy and the impact of it on the facility. We're not going to require them to provide so many attendance slots that they put them out of business.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we're going to look to see in each community how many slots we need. Okay?
Yeah.
I don't think any of the rest of it has been changed. So it would be my intention next time we get a chance to work on bills, if you can review that and let me know how you feel about it, I'm going to try to take another vote on it.
Okay.
I'll call you that way.
I don't see anything in the substitute that I have any problems with.
Okay. Any questions on that?
No. I think that's might be better now.
Okay. Nothing further. Meeting's adjourned.